everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. My name is Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. Tonight, we are talking about last night's 3-1 victory over Nashville at Chase Stadium. How are you feeling today, man?
Always buzzing after a victory, man. It was absolute messy magic yesterday. Although for the first 15 minutes, I was very surprised we were playing Nashville. I genuinely thought we were playing some other, like the Galaxy or something, because it was wild. But thankfully, we came out with a victory, played well, all good to end the weekend.
Yeah, Nashville came out hot. They came out with a nice press. They got an early goal and created another opportunity based on what they were doing early. But we'll get into that. We'll get into the game. We'll get into the goals. We'll give out some awards, as we always do. But before we get into the game, I want to talk about Matias Rojas. He was on the, not the bench, but in the Inter Miami section. He was sitting next to a bunch of the guys that are injured: Leo Campana, Facundo Farias, Federico Redondo. He was sitting with the team, and we kind of got a glimpse of him on the TV, kind of snapped a screenshot, put it on Twitter. That picture instigated one of the reporters talking to Tata Martino after the game and asking him about Matias Rojas. I want to see if I can pull up the quote, and I apologize for not having it ready, but it feels like we're about to get Matias Rojas, that's going to be happening any day now. First thoughts.
He was wearing the Inter Miami kit, so for me, he's already the Inter Miami player. I think this one's just going to be announced imminently, maybe as soon as tomorrow, but I think it's done. It's a good sign. He was there. I don't expect a player to show up in a team's kit at the team's game unless there's absolute guarantee that he's going to be there. I'm wondering why they haven't announced him yet and what's the holdup or the delay. Maybe they're waiting on his visa. Maybe they're waiting for some other checks to come through. But this one for me looks like it's almost at the finish line.
Yeah. In the post-game press conference, Tata asked the reporters if the club had officially confirmed it yet, and the reporters told him no, and so he decided maybe he shouldn't talk about it. But that makes it seem like Tata knows this is going to happen any day now, any hour now. But that means there still needs to be one roster move. Inter Miami is at 30 right now, and they would need to clear a spot in order to add Matias Rojas. They do have the international roster slot. They do have a senior roster slot, because more than 10 of those 30 are eligible for the supplemental roster. But still, it means there's another move coming. I've seen some speculation about a right back moving. I've seen some speculation about Robbie Robinson. I think that it could make sense that Israel Boatwright is a guy that goes on loan somewhere, because he's proven himself at the USL, at the next pro level. And clearly doesn't seem like he's in the plans for Tata Martino at right back. So there's a bunch of options for them to move. During our next podcast, which will be probably Wednesday night, I'm sure we'll know what that move was and we'll talk about it more in depth. But as far as adding Matias Rojas, this team clearly needs a winger. Our starting left winger in this game was Diego Gomez, who's not even a left winger, and even he went down. So we are really down to Lionel Messi and Leo Alfonso. So, not great news, but it would be really nice to get some reinforcements.
Yeah, that injury department seems to be filling up slowly and steadily. Looks like our nurses need to get more beds in place, because it's not looking good. I'm not sure how long the Diego Gomez injury is. He looked in pain, and the fact that he came off on a stretcher, not good. Hopefully he comes back very soon, because that's a player that we're going to need sorely. And you could automatically see the difference on the pitch when he wasn't there. We lost our penetration for a majority of that game when he went off. And just having Lionel Messi to depend on, who we know sometimes has to see through games through because of his injury, as well as the fact that he's going to be away during the summer for international duty. And then just having Leo Alfonso, who's literally joined the first team three games ago, doesn't look good. Doesn't look good for our front line.
Maybe we should talk about Diego Gomez for a minute, because it's a big loss. It's not exactly clear what happened yet. based on what I saw just from the video, and they never really showed a good replay, but it didn't feel like a soft tissue injury, like an Achilles tear, like a calf strain, like a hamstring pull, like a knee ACL type injury. To me, it looked like he broke his foot, which actually is not as bad as a lot of the soft tissue injuries. That feels like a month or two. And bones are pretty resilient and they grow back relatively well. So hopefully we get news soon that it's only going to be a month and not a 9-month recovery process. But yeah.
Yeah, he was holding his knee at first, but then the replay showed that the keeper stepped on his foot. So it was a bit of a weird one. I'm surprised they didn't analyze that in more detail during the game when there was time, but we didn't see too many replays to confirm what it actually was. But I agree with you. It didn't seem like it's a soft tissue issue. It might actually be that he has a sprain because of being stepped on or some sort of a surface injury. Hopefully it's not too bad.
I will say there was some reports that he was in a boot today. Sounds like he had a lot of swelling, but there was no definitive on what the actual injury was. So I hate to speculate on exactly how long it'll be because we don't really know what the problem is. But let's get into the game. There's some injury news, but maybe that's looking forward towards next week. So maybe we can talk about that at the end. We got the lineup. Inter Miami seemingly is done giving us the formation in advance, but this one was relatively easy to figure out. 4-3-3, basically the same 11 as last week. The only difference, Jordi Alba comes out with the injury. Franco Negri goes in at left back. We talked about it on the pregame show. It felt very standard. It felt like the appropriate lineup. But now that you've watched the game, any comments or criticisms that maybe you didn't think of in the pregame? Or was that the right lineup?
I would say with the way Nashville started, I'm glad we had the 4-3-3 on the pitch and not the 3-5-2, because we would have conceded at least three goals in those first 5 minutes if we had the 3-5-2. So I'm glad we had the 4-3-3. I think that was the best lineup that we could have gone with. And Tata worked it out really well. We predicted that lineup as well. And over the course of the 90 minutes, that was the right decision. And at no point did I feel that it was an issue of formation in any way or tactical issues at any point. So for me, I think we got it right to begin with. Obviously, we didn't cope well in the first 15 minutes with the way Nashville was playing. We were under a lot of pressure, and that was more to do with how the personnel deals with it on the pitch than tactics. So for me, I think this was the best formation that we could have put out.
Yeah, I agree. We both predicted this exactly. And even in the pregame, we were talking about maybe other things that could have happened. You know, maybe Kramaski could have started in the midfield. Maybe Noah Allen could have started at left back. But really, this felt like the obvious 11, and it's exactly what we got. And I agree with you. No mistakes, even after watching. I think the lineup was what it needed to be, given health and personnel available. I would say let's get into it, but Nashville already started it off. Almost as soon as we sat down, it was 1-0 on a corner kick early. It flies in and it doesn't hit anyone except Franco Negri in the leg, and it bounces right towards goal. Callender gets some fingers on it, but isn't able to deflect it. An own goal in the second minute is just about the worst way to start a game, about 1 minute away from the worst way. Do you even blame Negri? Do you even blame the set-piece defense? Or is this just one of those moments where you're glad it happens in the second minute, so you have a whole game to overcome it, and then you just move on?
I still remember when I was switching the stream on, I sat down. I was like, okay, this is going to be a nice, easy, possession-based game that we're going to see from Miami. Nashville is going to sit back a lot. And then the kickoff happened, and I literally had a whiplash because I got woken up with the way Nashville started. They were hot. They were on fire to begin with, and they caught our team off guard. And we talked about set pieces, and the fact that they haven't scored from a set piece, I was really surprised, because they're really dangerous on it. And we said that that was going to be one of their biggest pluses, and we're going to have to defend really well. That was a wild cross in, and I don't think not many of the players could have done much about it. It was really good delivery, and just unfortunate that Negri was in a difficult position. I think he was positioned well, but it just hit his thigh and went in. not even leg where he could have potentially booted it somewhere other than the goal. It just hit his thigh and went in. So I don't blame him too much. It's just unfortunate that he was in that place at that time. And really bad way to start, because we didn't want to give them that first goal. They could have just hunkered down and played us the game out. So not a great start.
Yeah. And we'll get into the tactics, but a tough start for Franco Negri. Not only that, which I agree, it's not really his fault. It looks like he thought someone was going to deflect it, and then it just went through. And by the time he realized it was just too late to react. He did have a turnover, though, in the first couple minutes. And that led to another set piece in the fifth minute, a corner kick. I can't remember if it was a corner or a set piece. But it turns into an opportunity for Nashville, and Bauer gets a shot on goal. We're actually quite lucky in the fifth minute that he hits it off the top post, bounces down and out, and we clear it. But 5 minutes in, Nashville is on fire, and we could be down 2-0 very easily. Lucky to be down 1-0. First 10 minutes, they press us very high. And that was something that we weren't expecting at all. And it's something we've struggled with, especially out of the gate, especially as we're settling into the game, and especially against a Nashville team that is doing something we never expected for them to do. What were your thoughts 10 minutes in?
Gary Smith learned from his last few games against Inter Miami. He adapted really well. He saw that if you give Inter Miami possession, they're going to play you off the park. So the best way to play against them is take the game to them. And that's what Nashville did, at least in the first 20 minutes. What surprised me the most was the fact that they got the first goal and they continued to press. They continued to play with a lot of intensity and they were going for another goal. They were actually going for the kill. And that surprised me. My first thought was they can't keep this on for the entirety of the 90 minutes. They're going to have to tire out at some point. But after we conceded that first, it was a bit of a shell shock for the players. And you could see that they didn't know how to react because we were trying desperately to get some breathing space and Nashville just wasn't giving that to us. And with Negri specifically, he gave away that foul that almost led to the second goal. I think it was a tough start for him. It shook his confidence a bit giving that first goal away. And then it took him a bit of time to get his footing back and get back into the groove of the game. But really well done by Nashville. I was super surprised by how they came out firing all guns blazing. But that's the way you play against this Inter Miami team. We don't have that first phase to second phase transition. And we are really struggling to play it out the back, not just in terms of giving the ball away, but in terms of doing something concrete with it from the back line. And I was just screaming at Callander to boot it out long, which he did a couple of times, but it wasn't working really well.
Yeah, we were really struggling to play the ball out from the back under that pressure. And I got to give Nashville credit. Inter Miami never expected that from them. And they came out and they did it really well. Hani Mukhtar seemingly led the press. He was sort of the dictator on when they would go for it. And they were all guns blazing in those first 10 minutes. But Inter Miami does settle down. They start playing through it because they have the quality to do that. And then it was sort of wide open for Inter Miami going the other way. It leads in the 11th minute to Inter Miami's opening goal. Lionel Messi gets some space inside the box, fires off a shot. A save by Panico, but he kind of parries it into a bad spot. Luis Suarez looks like he's going to go in for the kill. Then it looks like he's a little too slow for the kill, but the ball winds up at the foot of Lionel Messi with an open net, and he just puts it in 1-1 in the 11th minute. And I feel good at this point. Like, we had a bad start, but then I was thinking immediately, this team, if they press us for 90 minutes, we're going to play through them and we're going to score 3 or 4 goals, and they're not going to be able to keep up with us. So I actually felt like it was a nice shock and awe tactic for them. But if they were going to continue to do that, it was going to be an easy win for Inter Miami. It's 1-1, 11th minute. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I agree with you. When I saw that the fast pace at which Nashville was playing, my first reaction was, you can't do this for the whole 90 minutes because that's just not their play style. They're obviously trying something new. They're playing out of their comfort zone. But eventually they're going to revert back to their own tactics and their play style. For me, I think What was a little bit worrying was it took Messi again for him to take the game by the scruff of his neck and try and make something happen for us to wake up. Before that, we were quite lethargic. We were getting bogged down and we didn't necessarily know how to react to Nashville. So the fact that we have Messi always helps, and the fact that he was able to sort of take the lead and being like, hey, guys, time to calm down. We're still better than them. We will get this done. I think it was a few really good passes from the midfield to Messi's feet, and then Messi does what Messi does. Suarez, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but his tiny dink over the defender, I think it took a deflection, which led to Messi then scoring into an open goal. I think he did well there to try and get the ball out to Messi. But overall, I think it was a well-constructed goal.
I think we're giving Suarez a little too much credit there.
Yeah,
a ball gets kicked into him and it just redirects towards
Messi. Hey. At least we'll it didn't get booted out. That's all that matters.
True, and we'll take that.
Yeah.
There's another nice chance in the 13th minute, just a few minutes later. Lionel Messi gets the ball on his right foot. Kind of as a weak shot past Panico, but it's problem is it wasn't on target, hits the post, bounces out. He has another chance in the 29th minute. He kind of smashes it this time, but it's right at Panico. So another save. Inter Miami feels like they're now the team dictating things, but it's still tied 1-1 going into sort of the later stages of the first half. 37th minute, Diego Gomez steals the ball from Panico, or I guess intercepts a pass, puts a ball into Luis Suarez. Lucas Mignon makes a really nice last man save to kick the ball away from Suarez scoring there. But in the play, Diego Gomez gets his foot stepped on, out for the game. How much did this change the game to you? I know, let me finish the sequence, because it's the following corner kick that Lionel Messi puts it in. Sergio Busquets gets the small touch, and then Inter Miami goes up 2-1. But Diego Gomez comes out of the game. Leo Alfonso goes in. How much did this impact the game? Even though you have your 2-1 lead, you've lost that really dangerous player on the left side that seemingly unlocks Inter Miami's offense.
For me, it was a tale of two tragedies, or at least one tragedy and then one fortunate slug, because we lost Diego Gomez, but then we scored subsequently on that corner. And the fact that we lost him when we were 2-1 up was a much better timing than 1-1, because then Nashville now had to come out and try and open up the spaces a little bit to attack us. But losing Diego Gomez was a big, big problem, because we lost that penetration in the final third. He brings something to this team that's really hard to find anywhere else in any other player, especially in that midfield that we have currently going. And he has so much value in terms of not just breaking up the opposition attack, in terms of being disruptive, but just the runs that he makes and the final third penetration and occupation that he has of other team's defenders. And you lose that once he's off the pitch, because no other player that we have currently does that. And you could see that we were struggling to take control of the game once we went up. I think the second half, Nashville saw a lot of the ball, more than I would have preferred them to have. But thankfully, we were 2-1 up and not 1-1, because I would have been a lot more worried about losing him at 1-1 than I would have been at 2-1.
Okay, let's rewind a second. Let's go to halftime, because Inter Miami's winning 2-1. They have seemingly looked at what Nashville was throwing at them in the beginning with a high press, then at some point with a mid-block, at some point with a low block. Kind of a shifting style of play from Nashville. And they handled it. And they go into halftime with a 2-1 lead. And they haven't actually allowed any clear-cut opportunities for Nashville outside of that fifth-minute shot on goal, or rather shot off the post. At halftime, I feel like this is going sort of how we thought it might go. We are feeling comfortable. We're playing a team that is seemingly overmatched. They're disjointed. And it feels like it's a 3-1, 4-1 type game at halftime. Even Leo Alfonso, who comes on, there's that offside situation where Messi and Gressel and Alfonso combined to put the ball in the back of the net. It gets called offsides. But still, it feels like we're dictating the pace of play. Halftime, how are you feeling?
We predicted this as well in our pregame. I said it's going to be 2-1 going into the half, and then the next half we're going to score a couple more. So I knew going into this game that Nashville has the threat. They're going to score at least one. And our defense isn't the most robust. We tend to leak goals. We haven't been the most sturdy. And I was expecting at least one to be conceded by Inter Miami, and which they did. But at no point did I feel too threatened by Nashville, even after their first 15 minutes blitz that they had. I thought we were handling them pretty well. And a lot of the issues that we were facing was self-created rather than Nashville being threatening. So I felt good. I thought we were going to score a couple more. And overall, I felt happy going into that first half because we created plenty of chances. We overcame adversity and it was looking good.
In the pregame show, we talked about how we were feeling really good about this game and how maybe that was foolish because there was every opportunity that we lose this game, seemingly, and yet we felt very comfortable and positive. And that is exactly how I felt at halftime, was we were going to crush it. And then early on in the second half, I realized why I felt the other way might be possible in the second half. I pinpointed the 53rd minute as when things started to shift into Nashville's hands. I felt Hani Mukhtar really took over the game and decided he was going to make an impact on this game. And he's a great player, so he has the ability to do that. From the 53rd minute until, let's call it the 73rd minute, it felt like Nashville was on the verge of getting the equalizer, and there wasn't much Inter Miami could do. They were struggling to move the ball through the midfield. It felt like their midfield had collapsed, really, and they weren't able to do anything in terms of possession through the midfield. What was your thought process at this point? Why was that happening, and how are you feeling?
I wasn't too sure why it was happening. My initial reaction was, where are Gressel and Ruiz? I thought they disappeared in those 20 minutes because I did not see them once come for the ball or try and give Sergio Busquets some support in that midfield to try and get it out. I think Nashville became a lot more disciplined in the midfield. There weren't as many spaces to exploit. And Inter Miami just struggled to play through. And we mentioned the first phase build-up. I think in the first half, we saw us struggling in the under pressure. And in the second half, we just struggled to get it out into a good outlet. And I think one reason for that was Diego Gomez, because he offers a really important outlet from our midfield into the transition from the second to the third phase. And we lost that a little bit because he wasn't taking control of the ball and running. And Gressel and Ruiz were not the ones taking responsibility to pick up the ball in those spaces and then move it on to Messi. Nashville, I think, had a good control of the ball. They weren't giving the ball away as they did in the first half. And they just seemed to be on top. And it happens during games. It's normal to sort of give away momentum from time to time. But that was the time that I was expecting Tata to now make a change.
If I've learned anything from watching soccer over my lifetime, it's that if I don't exactly know what the right solution is, it's probably to restructure your midfield. I felt that in the 53rd minute, the momentum started to swing towards Nashville, and it felt like there was a change to be had for Inter Miami, and that was going to be the only way we got through that period. It does come in the 74th minute. That's when Julian Gressel comes off and Yannick Bright goes on. And that was the exact restructuring that I'm talking about, where you take off an offensive player that can't get on the ball, that can't push through, and you bring on a defensive midfielder that's going to make you feel a lot more comfortable and allow Sergio Busquets and David Ruiz to play a little bit higher up and get into better positions to receive the ball. To me, that was the difference in why their sort of run of possession and run of control of the game sort of stopped, is the restructuring of our midfield. And it felt like from that point on, Inter Miami was a lot more comfortable. Yannick Bright had a few turnovers that sort of changed where possession was, or where the ball was in the game, from our final third into sort of more of a midfield battle. Eventually, we get the put away goal. Leo Alfonso draws a kind of a dumb foul from Josh Bauer in the penalty box, sort of at the edge. An unnecessary move from Josh Bauer gives us a penalty. Lionel Messi steps up, takes it, puts it away. It's 3-1, and the game is basically over. Is that how you saw things in terms of that switch being what changed the game? And obviously Messi getting that third goal put it away. But even in those final 15 minutes, it didn't feel like Nashville was threatening like they had been for that 20-minute stretch earlier in the second half.
Yeah, it just felt like the midfield fell into a little bit of slumber and we needed to freshen things up. I was expecting Yannick Bright to come on at least 15 minutes before he actually did. And you could see the immediate impact that he had on the game. I think he played really well in terms of his positioning. He was quite fresh and energetic and disruptive. And I could see a few instances where he took the ball out from the opposition and then progressed it further. I think he looked really experienced and he looked really good and mature for his age. And yeah, there you go. He looked more so as an experienced guy than a rookie. I completely agree because he plays with a sense of maturity and calmness that comes from somebody who's played at this level for a while, which is really fascinating to watch. And I think that was a perfect substitution. Case to be made that it could have come earlier, but thankfully we hadn't conceded in that time. And after that, once we had the penalty and Messi put it away, it just seemed like we're cruising away to victory today.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about Yannick Bright later on when we get into some of that individual talk. But any other moments from the game that you want to get into? Because I want to spend some time talking about Nashville as a team, where they're at, what they did in this game. But any other moments that sort of leap off the page to you that you felt were worth conversation?
I think kudos to Negri, who played a lot better after that first few minutes of, you know, shock and all that they faced. So well played on him. I think Wiegand was a lot better this game, and I'm sure we're going to talk about him as well. That was a really, really good battle to watch between him and Schaffelberg. There were instances where Schaffelberg got the better of him. There were instances where Wiegand got the better of him. Overall, I think they did really well. The defense does really good things. The only thing that we struggle with is trying to progress the ball, and that's just a matter of personnel, I think. None of our players are really good at playing with the feet and playing with the ball in their feet. So it's just, you know, not our forte to play out from the back. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that more. But overall, I think we coped well after that first onslaught.
Yeah. Gary Smith has this Nashville team and they have about 11 quality players on the roster. And it seems like they were missing about 6 of them in this game. I guess the injury report said only 3 or 4, but they don't have any depth. And so when they lose some of their best players, they fall off hard. This team has not been great in MLS recently. The last month has been pretty bad for them. I think they're second to last in the East and bottom 5 for the Supporter Shield race in all of MLS. And I'm not sure how that changed yesterday or maybe this evening, but they've been bad. And this felt like Gary Smith said, I don't have the talent to go on the road and beat Inter Miami. So I'm going to throw some tactical things at them to see if they can handle it. And that's the sense that I got from Nashville was they were admitting, we don't have the talent to beat you with a style. So we're going to throw a couple different styles at you and try and beat you by confusing you, by switching it up and trying to catch a break when you're sort of still on the last thing. They came out with a high press early. They played some mid block. They played some low block. They went back to the press. They played Honeyball for a while. It felt like they were just throwing things out there to see if they could get an advantage in any of them. Is that the sense you got? And if so, I mean, is that just kudos to Gary Smith for being creative and trying to do what he can with what he has?
I think he might have played this style even if he had some of his players available to him because, well, maybe if not Zimmerman. If they had Zimmerman, they would have been a lot more defensive. But I agree with you. I think, sorry?
And Shaqmore
as well, yeah. Damn, they were missing quite a few players. I was very impressed with their ability to switch it up because Gary Smith saw the first two games that he played against Inter Miami and how Inter Miami was able to come out on top. We're a possession-based team. We love to play with the ball and the feet. And he thought, you know what, I'm just going to go out there and disrupt that. So the first 15 minutes was all that. They got rewarded for it, and they should have scored two. I'll be honest, we should have been 2-0 down. So
they should have scored one, and then we gifted them another one.
But we should have been 2-0 down regardless, and that would have changed the game completely. I know there was still a long, long time to play, but 2-0 would have been a much worse scoreline to come back from than 1-0, which I still think we could have overcome. Anyways, I think they showed a lot of character in switching things up. I agree with you. I think he saw moments in the game where things weren't working and then shifted his tactics and strategy accordingly. I think the 20 to 30 minutes that they dominated in that second half were all to play through Hani Mukhtar, and he had some absolute thunderous shots on Drake Callender, who did well to save those. But overall, good adaptability. And also the players, I think they adapted well to the style that he was trying for them to play. It's just sad that Inter Miami has the quality to overcome a lot of those things that were thrown at them. But I was very impressed with Nashville, because I thought this was going to be a boring game, because the first 45 minutes absolutely flew by.
Okay, just to break it down from Nashville's perspective, their midfield's bad. One of the worst midfields in MLS. Their star center back is out and has been for a month. Their right back, who's one of their better players, also out. Their best player, Hani Mukhtar, has been not in great form lately, and they don't have a goalkeeper. Other than that, they're pretty solid. But
they have two goalkeepers. They brought on their goalkeeper.
I think that means they have zero goalkeepers. I would take CJ Dos Santos over either of those. My goodness, they're in a bad spot. And it's weird because I've never seen Nashville this disorganized. And again, going back to Gary Smith, it was like he knew he had to just try different things to sort of catch Miami out of, you know, control and just try and make something happen from nothing by just switching it up over and over and over again. And it did work for a while. They found a couple of things that worked. And so I just want to give them kudos for that. They also, by the way, I forgot to mention this. Their next best center back goes out in the 55th minute. So they down two center backs. They're playing a left back as one of their center backs. It was bad. Their next center back comes in and fouls someone in the penalty box. And the third string backup has been awful for the last year. Other than that, they're doing okay, though.
Do you think it would have been better for them to maybe take the first half a little bit slower, absorb the pressure, and then use the press in the second half? Because it felt like they sort of threw the kitchen sink at the start, and then they didn't have any more ammunition. So they just try to play through stuff.
I don't think the press was going to work for them for longer than 15 minutes or 10 minutes.
Yeah, but do you think they should have done it in the latter 30 minutes of the game rather than the front 30 minutes?
I don't know. I mean, I think them getting a goal, I mean, I think those first 10 minutes are everything you could have asked for. And so, I don't know. I just think they're not a great team right now. And they'll probably be a lot better of a team in 3 months. But for right now, they're in a bad spot. And I think we got them at a good time. Anything else about Nashville that you wanted to touch on? Hani Mukhtar did look like the Hani Mukhtar that we've kind of become accustomed to over the last couple of years in that second half. But Schaffelberg, maybe we can talk about Schaffelberg. He has been dangerous for them lately. Not that they've done a lot, but he's been their sort of primary weapon. He's very athletic, very pacey. I was reminded in this game that even though Chelo Wigan is solid defensively and he's athletic, he's not explosive like DeAndre Yedlin was. But with that said, I still thought he did a pretty decent job on Schaffelberg.
Yeah, I think Schaffelberg defending such pace and power is difficult. And I knew that Wigan's going to give up some space to him at some points in the game. And as I mentioned, that battle was really fascinating to watch because both were getting the better of one another at time from time to time. But I think Wigan came out the better of the two because Schaffelberg didn't have much of a threat as such. I really like the fact that Wigan was able to, despite the lack of his explosiveness, he was able to recover really well and use his pace to get back into position to try and stop Schaffelberg. And yes, Gressel's only part in the game was slamming Schaffelberg onto the side. And I think Wiegand used his physicality really well to his advantage and got down to the ground a few times, tried to be a little more physical and hands-on with Schaffelberg, and that worked. And I think he did a fantastic job in him.
Yeah, I agree. He did something interesting where even though he did get beat for pace on a couple occasions by Schaffelberg, he positioned his body where Schaffelberg beat him, but not in a position where he could do damage, sort of heading towards the baseline and just sort of having to put in a lucky cross to see if something could happen, but not in a position where he could turn on his right foot and fire a shot, not in a position where he was between Wiegand and the goal directly, and he could kind of run at the next defender and try and make something happen. So I thought Wiegand did a good job with positioning. He also had that one play where he sort of hustled the entire length of the field to prevent Schaffelberg from getting a good shot off. That was just an individual moment of nice effort and quality, and it was good to see.
Was that not like at the 30th minute? Because there was one instance, I think, somewhere between the 20th and 30th minute where I think Wiegand was far up the pitch because we had the ball and then we lost it, and they cross-fielded the ball to Schaffelberg, who was completely free on that side. And Wiegand just busted his butt to get back in position. And yes, yeah. As soon as he got back in position, Schaffelberg was, you know, no lanes for him to cut through. So he had to go inside, and then Avilés was there to defend that. So I was really, really happy to see Wiegand use his positioning in order to overcome the lack of pace that he was facing against Schaffelberg, which shows that he's an intelligent player.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I agree 100%. It was really good to see. And I'm really much more encouraged about him defensively over the last, I mean, since he got here, really. I thought he's had good positioning. In the first game and a half, I think we saw a little bit more technical ability going forward that we thought might lead to more than it has over the last couple games. But maybe that's just a matter of settling in. Maybe that's the part that's inconsistent. But him being a solid defender, I think, is really nice to have back there. Going into Miami, let's talk about building up and building out of pressure, especially in that first phase. First 15 minutes or so, maybe even a little longer, they were under pressure. That was Nashville's game plan. They were pressing high. They were trying to cause turnovers. It worked for the first 5 or 7 minutes, but then Inter Miami seemingly figured out how to play through it. Once they figured out what was happening, they were able to position themselves to play through it. I thought in the first half they did a good job of adjusting to it. In the second half, not as much. But talk to me about that first phase.
There were a couple of things that I noticed from our players and Tata. I'm not sure if this was... I haven't gone back and watched the game, but at the time, when we were struggling to build out from the back, Wiegand went up the pitch and Gressel took that right back position when we were in possession of the ball. And I think Tata's idea was to have someone like Gressel, who's better on the ball, to try and help progress that and move forward from the first to the second phase. I'm not sure how much it worked, because I don't think Gressel had much of a... He didn't have much of an impact in trying to get that out in play. But I saw him in Cello Wiegand's position a fair few times to try and be an outlet for the back line to play through. So that was an interesting tactic that I think Tata employed. But for us, for Inter Miami, I think what changed was Nico Freire. I'm not sure if you saw, but a fair few times he had a really good pass into the midfield, into the feet of Messi, where I was like, damn, that's a really good pass. Why hasn't he been doing this more often? And he did it, I think, 3 times throughout that game, which now I want him to do more and more, because he's got this passing on him that I saw in this game, which helps alleviate the pressure of the back line and move into that second phase through Busquets and then into Messi. So I think once we started doing that, once Sergio Busquets got a lot more onto the ball, I think it became a lot better. But I'm not sure what you saw there, but that was my understanding of the play.
Yeah, I have a different take on it. But I will say, I don't know about Nico Freire. I didn't think he had an amazing game, actually. He is capable of putting in those passes with that left foot into the midfield, but he's also capable of making those same passes 3 yards to the left or right and just being a straight turnover and an easy transition opportunity. So I don't want to give him, you know, in this game, you're right, he did have a couple, you know, line breaking passes. But
I think the first goal came through Nico Ferrer's line breaking pass, which fell into Messi's feet, and then Messi had that run into the box. So that I want to see more of.
Sure. I just think Busquets started, like, I think once Busquets realized this is their game plan is to press high, he started getting into better positions. And more importantly, he was able to direct other people to get into a position for him to,
yep,
you know, get some outlets and for him to be a distraction so that some of the other guys could break lines. And I think it was just sort of more smarts from the players on the field and positioning better. But again, it's just like they weren't expecting that when the ball kicked off. And by the time they realized what was happening, they sort of were able to adjust to it relatively well. The take that I have on this is that I actually am not worried about us playing out of the back. I know a lot of people, they see that press and they want us to go long and not turn the ball over. And I understand that I'm going to sound a little hypocritical for this because of how much I slammed them for this in the Monterrey game. But this is MLS, and I think we have some young players that really need to develop in that aspect. Drake Callender, one of them. Toto Aviles, one of them. And if we're going to get the best out of them as players, and not just us, but if they're going to become the best players they can be, they need to get better at doing those types of things and developing so that they can be press resistant. Right? Drake Callender, I'm assuming, has dreams of playing in Europe. I know Toto Aviles plans to play in Europe at some point. And so if they want to do that, if Toto Aviles wants to make the jump to La Liga or, you know, some league like that, he's going to have to be press resistant. And he's only going to get there by, at least from where he is now, he's only going to get there by playing out of the back under pressure. And so to me, I'm actually happy now that the games are a little bit lower stakes, that we are forcing our guys to play out of the back so that they're going to get that experience and hopefully become more comfortable doing it. And then I think once we get forward into League's Cup and we might have to play a Monterrey again or a team like that, we'll be a little bit more prepared to do that. And then going into the playoffs, I think all of these reps, all of these experiences, and then taking this, you know, every mistake you make, you go back, you watch the film and you learn from it. Those will make Toto Aviles and they'll make Drake Callender better players so that they, when it comes to winning time in the later parts of this season, they'll be ready to do that well.
Yeah. I'm not sure why we didn't talk about Toto Aviles and his clearance on the line, which
because
was
absolutely... I'm saving it for an award. That's okay. Why
I will then not talk too much about it, but I think he had a good game. And I don't know whether I agree with your point about playing, let them play through that pressure of trying to learn on the field. I think the training pitch is where you need to do the learning, and then, you know, the field is where you try and win as much as you can. So I'm not sure if I agree with that point, but yeah, that's one way to do it, I guess. When the stakes are low, I guess that's where you try out new things. But I agree, we need to get Busquets more on the ball because that's what changes our structure quite a bit. And I also like the fact that Gressel was available in that position to try and be an outlet there, but we didn't necessarily use him. But he got there and occupied a space, which I feel he didn't do much of during the game. So
yeah, but I guess I want to talk about that too, because you did point it out, and I think that was a good point. I noticed it too, that he was out there in that right back spot, but it didn't feel like the team was doing anything with it, which I thought was weird.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They didn't use
it. Exactly. It felt like a tactical decision to put him there and to get Chelo higher up the pitch, and yet it didn't feel like the center backs or Busquets were using it for anything. I don't know. Maybe it was just how Nashville came out sort of threw them off their game plan, and they weren't able to adjust to it. I don't know. Maybe that was because they were expecting a low block and they didn't really get it. So I don't know. That's curious. I would like to know. I would like to hear Tata's thoughts on that if that was possible. Let's talk about the defense. I don't know if we agree on how they played in this game. They gave up a goal early, but it was an own goal, not really based on the defense, but they do give up a different set piece opportunity in the fifth minute. But other than that, they were pretty solid throughout the first half. And then in the second half, they were under a lot of pressure and they never gave up a goal. Talk to me about how you're feeling about the defense in this game.
I mentioned this 5 minutes ago as well, and I like the defense in this particular game. I think they played really well. For me, we've got faults in our defense, specifically playing out the back, playing with the ball in our feet. but that's secondary to preventing goals from going in. And regardless of us giving away, I think, 13 shots in this game, we didn't necessarily feel threatened that they're going to score apart from that first 15 or 10 minutes, right? So I think the remainder of the game, the defense did really well in doing what they're supposed to do, and that is defend their box and defend the goal. Hani Mukhtar had a few chances, but a lot of those were long-range shots as well, which he tried to get off on Callander. And obviously, we both consider Callander as the last line of our defense. So overall, I think they had a really good game. And I was worried because I thought Franco Negri and Chelo Wigan were going to be the ones under pressure because Nashville likes to play on the wings and put the balls into the box, specifically Chelo Wigan. But he got good support from Aviles when he needed it. And overall, I think they worked really well together as a unit and defended well.
Yeah, I agree. I thought as a unit, they were pretty stout. Again, if it wasn't for the own goal, we would have gotten a clean sheet in this game. I hear what you're saying. I'm starting to see what you saw a couple games ago between Tota Aviles and Nico Freire. I agree. I do think that there's a nice partnership building there. And kudos to you for noticing it first. I don't think I've seen Christophe and Tota Aviles look that comfortable together. And I don't think Kamal Miller and Tota Aviles ever looked that comfortable together either. So kudos to you. And I'm starting to see it too. I saw some concerns from people on Twitter and on, you know, other, you know, people commenting on this game about how the defense was bad. And I didn't really get that. I thought they were pretty stout, actually. So interesting to hear that you agree. Okay, we promised after the Monterrey game that we were going to talk about Tata Martino every game for the next couple, at least till things calm down, because that performance was really bad from him. And so I think it warrants us diagnosing every decision that he makes with a little bit more scrutiny. Starting with the lineup, did you think that he did exactly what he needed to do?
I think he did what he needed to do. I knew he was going to play Gresso because this was a game that Gresso should have played in, given that Nashville always plays with a low block. But it turned out that Nashville didn't play with a low block to begin with. At certain points in the game, they did, but that wasn't the majority of their gameplay, which kind of took away the point of Gresso being on the pitch. And for me, I felt like Tata Martino had a good setup. He couldn't have predicted how Nashville come through, and I understand why he went with the lineup that he did, because I would have done the same. So that I'm going to give him a check for.
Yeah, just based on all the injuries and who's available, I think this was the right 11. Benjamin Kramaski, if you told me that they were going to come out the way they did, I probably would have started him over Julian Gressel, but I know Tata Martino wasn't going to do that. He loves Julian Gressel, and Julian Gressel's here because Tata Martino asked him to come. And so he has some real loyalty to Gressel, and that's going to play out on the pitch for a while. Okay, in-game decisions. I think he relied on his players to figure out what Nashville was doing early on, and they did. And so that was good. It's 2-1 at halftime. Really, the biggest talking point to me was in the 55th minute, the game really starts to change in Nashville's favor. And I texted you while the game was happening, maybe in the 58th minute. This isn't going, you know, how we want it to go. And what should we do? And, you know, what is Tata going to do? And is he going to do anything? Because it didn't feel like he was on the trigger to pull something out of his hat. How are you feeling about that? And based on what he eventually did, how do you feel about that?
Not good, because I think we got away there. There was a really long window where we were under pressure for a bit, at least 20, 25 minutes. And Nashville could have easily scored in that time. So for me, the decision-making there was too delayed. It should have been much earlier, because we immediately saw, as soon as Yannick Bright came on, we got control again. And you could see it from your, like, sitting in on your couch watching the game. I could see it as well. I don't know why Tata waited that long. I would have actually gotten on Yannick Bright at the 55th minute and then bring on Kramaski at the 75th minute. But Tata just waited longer on both of those. So I think he gambled a little bit there, and it paid off in his favor, because we didn't concede during those 20 minutes, But if we had conceded in those 20 minutes, we would be absolutely holding our heads, hands in our hand, because then we would have been blaming Tata. So I think he got lucky there. And I wasn't necessarily impressed with his substitutions at the time in which they came.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. I would have liked to see in 58th minute, 60th minute, Tata make that move. And I think he made the right move.
Yeah.
Taking Gressel off and putting on Yannick Bright restructures the midfield so that you have that solid defensive presence in Bright, which allows Busquets and David Ruiz to play a little bit more up the field. And especially for Busquets, it lets him find positions in space where he was struggling when he was sort of just the outlet for the defense and for Drake Callender. This allowed him to sort of find the space as opposed to trying to create it. And that's what let us get more possession. That's what let us move the ball out of our own final third. I mean, there was a 15, 20 minute period where it felt like the game was being played at the edge of our final third and with Nashville on the ball. And I agree with you. I think he got away with it. This is probably not something that we would be hyper analyzing 3 months ago, but now that Tata Martino might be on the hot seat, or at least is worthy of criticism now. To me, that was the most critical moment of the game where he got lucky to not give up a goal. And if you do give up a goal, it changes everything because you don't have a lot of attacking substitutes to bring on to change the game in your favor that way, right? You're going to rely on Gressel. And if they do score that goal, I think we probably get the same 11. Well, I guess Afonso had already come on, but you get in that same lineup deep into the second half because he's hoping Gressel can be a playmaker and create a goal. So we got lucky that we didn't give up a goal. We got lucky that Yannick Bright came on and sort of reshaped the game. Kudos to you. Kudos to him, I mean, for having that. You mentioned earlier that he has sort of a wisdom and a calmness to his game that really plays well. And this is the thing that at least I really liked from him in the preseason that got me so excited about him, because you watch him play and he's so calm and comfortable and he just knows where to be positionally and especially defensively. It's just really nice to have a guy like that. Kramaski comes on in the 88th minute. Again, I would have liked to see him in the 80, as soon as we get the third goal. I don't understand why he's not coming on. But I don't know. I guess maybe that's nitpicking a little bit.
No, I don't think that's nitpicking. I actually think he should have come on around the 78th or the 75th minute, because I want to see him now get more involved and build his chemistry back with the players that are on the pitch, because I see him as an eventual starter in this team. And bringing him on in the 88th minute, that's, he doesn't have the time to impact the game. And he's a player that you're going to rely on a lot going forward, and you need to build his confidence and build his match fitness and his sharpness and his chemistry. And you need to give him a little bit more time on the pitch. I don't think 5 minutes is enough. So I would have actually got him on much earlier. And I agree with you. He should have come on either as soon as we scored that third goal or even maybe earlier.
How does that make you think Tata feels about Benha? Because he relied on him a lot last year, but Benha sort of demanded to be in the starting lineup. And we've seen this year that I don't know if Benha's in the best 11, because Gomez is just playing on another level right now. And obviously he's not going to bench Busquets, and Redondo is also one of those players I think is close to Busquets where he's just an automatic start. But those guys aren't there. They weren't, you know, after the first 40 minutes, there was no Dio Gomez. Redondo's been gone for a couple weeks now. And Benha still hasn't gotten a start, which is a little surprising to me, because he has not been afraid to throw guys out there, especially coming back from injury, just to see what they have. And Kramaski hasn't got that. So on the one hand, I think it's good that he felt the need to throw him on to make him feel like he was a part of the team, because he didn't have to. In the 88th minute, there was no need to throw him on and to get Suarez 5 minutes off. I mean, it wasn't important to do that, but I think maybe it's important to Benha to feel like he's right there on the cusp of getting minutes and is a part of the plan. But also, why not give him an extra 8 minutes on top of that, especially once you get that third goal?
Ask me this question again after the next game, because that's when it's really going to matter. Now that Diego Gomez is out, I will expect, like, on my predicted team sheet, spoiler for the listeners, Benjamin Kramaski is going to be on there on the first starting 11.
But let's hold off on spoilers, because there's a bunch of players that are seemingly coming back from injury, and we're playing in New England. They have a turf field, so I wouldn't go cement if you're predicted 11.
Yeah, but still, really think it through. Hypothetically speaking, in the next game with Diego Gomez out, I would want Benjamin Kramaski in my starting 11 in that midfield. If he's not, if Tata Martino picks David Ruiz and Gressel again, then that worries me, because now I'm going to start thinking about why Benjamin Kramaski is not being considered, because he's been back for a few games now. And it's not like his injury was really, really problematic that he needs to be played into the starting 11, or he needs to, you know, take his time to get back into shape. It was a medical hernia, I believe, a sports hernia, I believe. So it wasn't like it was a muscle injury or anything. So,
and his cardio should be in a good spot too.
So I'm not sure what that stands at, but ask me that question again in a couple of games.
As far as in-game adjustments, sometimes it's hard to make in-game adjustments from the sideline. But I think the best way to do that is to make substitutes that show your team what you want from them. And I think he did a good job with this by putting on Yannick Bright. Your midfield knows that there's a defender back there that you can rely on, and allows the rest of your midfield and, you know, Leo Afonso to play higher up and just to be more of an outlet. So I think in that sense, he did a good job. Any other comments on Tata Martino for this game, or, you know, any grade you want to give him?
I think he's fixed in his ways, and we're going to see that for the entire time that he's the coach for Inter Miami. So it might be frustrating at certain points to see him not make certain decisions that we want him to, but I guess that's every coach, right? So they have their ways, they have their favorite players, and that's how it's going to play out. I think he got away with one in this game, with the timing of his substitutions was a little bit delayed, but overall, we won that game. We got the 3 points. So not much more to say about Tata.
Before we get into awards, I want to go back to the chat and answer a few questions. Gressel is a right back. It just feels like it's not going to happen, right? I mean, it's just clear Tata doesn't see him as a right back.
Not in a 4-3-3. I don't think he has the athleticism to play in a 4-3-3 as a out-and-out right back. Imagine him against Schaffelberg. Yeah, that would have been a disaster.
I don't want to imagine it. And then the last, I know we talked about Matias Rojas at the beginning, but it does feel like he's going to be signed in the next 48 hours. The deadline is Wednesday. I'm sorry, the deadline is Tuesday evening. So it's going to happen. I think it's just a matter of making the correlated move to get a guy off the roster. And it's impossible to know what that is right now, just because we don't know. It's impossible to know what's taking so long because we don't know what that move's going to be. But maybe once the move is made, we'll be like, oh yeah, that's why it didn't happen until towards the end.
Yeah, I expect him to be on that, you know, team sheet, at least in the subs, or maybe even starting against New England.
Yeah, I actually think we'll see him next week too. Let's do some awards. How's that sound?
Sounds great. I've got some good ones today.
I'm not so good at bringing good awards, but I come with a few. But first, let's start with Inter Miami's man of the match. Last week, you gave it out. And so that means that it's my turn. And finally, the tables have turned where it's an easy decision for this one. I'm giving it to Lionel Messi, dude. 2 goals, an assist. He had so many little moments in the game, just like a touch around a defender or something like that. This was his best game, I thought, for Inter Miami since before his last injury. Maybe since that first Nashville game or even Orlando City. I'm sorry, the second Nashville game or the Orlando City game. He was just so fun, and he was Lionel Messi. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
I think he's in absolutely hot form before the Copa America. And he's going to play like this before that, which is really good signs for Argentina in general. He's phenomenal, man. Every time he's on that pitch, he just does things that I'm... Wow. There was that one ball roll that he did in the middle of the park where he absolutely took away the entire midfield for the other team. Then his passing range is phenomenal. He had that one dink pass to Gressel, which almost created that third goal with Afonso being a little bit offside.
He also had another goal that hit, or had another shot that hit the post. He just hit the post.
I was so surprised that he literally just passed it into the goal and it still had the power to, you know, hit the post. But he just does things that constantly surprise you and put you in awe of him. So I 100% agree. No other player deserves that as much as Lionel Messi, especially in this game, because we were under pressure and he showed his leadership to be like, you know what, guys, calm down. I'm still the best player in the world. I'm going to take you out of this. And he just took the ball and, yeah, made the difference at a time when you needed him to. And that sort of calmed the entire team down as well, because we could see that he's just doing things that are phenomenal on that pitch. Helps to have him in your team.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. He's now on 10 goal contributions this season in only 6 games played, am I right? No, that's just for the MLS. 10 goal contributions in 6 MLS games. In all competitions, I think it's 9 games, 14 goal contributions. he's amazing, dude. I don't know what else to say. Do you think he's going to play next week, though? We're playing on turf in New England, but also there's no excuse to not play. There's no midweek games. I don't know. I think he might not play next weekend.
Maybe. Depends on the availability.
If we get Robert Taylor and we get Matias Rojas, I could see him coming off the bench for 15 minutes.
I was going to say.
And Matias Rojas being the starting right winger next weekend. Or Julian Gressel, I guess. Next award, as always, is the heron that flew north. Florida herons, they don't fly anywhere. So flying north would be doing the wrong thing. And that captures the essence of this award. And fortunately for me, you have to give it out this time. Who's it going to go to?
It's a bit harsh. And I think everyone had a decent game. Not everyone was amazing, but everyone had a decent game. But for me, I think Julian Gressel was the heron that flew north, because he went missing at really crucial points in that game. And I could point out on the tips of my fingers how many times I saw him do something in terms of actual contributive action. I thought he was a little bit out of it. He was, you know, again, we saw that instance where he was moving into that right back role, but wasn't really utilized as such. I think in the midfield, he sort of disappeared because we were bypassing him. He wasn't too involved in the build up either. The only time I saw him getting involved was when Afonso had that opportunity. I know it's harsh, but that's who I think my heron that flew north is for, specifically because I think he had a role to play in this game if Nashville was playing a low block. But they didn't. So for him to adjust and still find himself being available and trying to make a difference, I don't think he did that enough. But yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on Julian Gressel in this game.
He is, I think, the first back-to-back Heron that flew north award winner. Last week I thought he was worse. He had a bunch of turnovers last week. And this week it just felt like he disappeared. I think most crucially was during that 20-minute stretch where Nashville was really putting the pressure on. He needed to be an outlet, and he wasn't able to be an outlet. So I think it's fair, though. Maybe not who I would have given it to, but I think it's definitely fair. And, he's struggling to find his role in this team, and that's all I'm going to say, because I do think he's a good player. And I do think that he's going to have like a 3 or 4 or 5 game stretch this season where we're like, that's the Julian Gressel we brought in. He's going to be the difference maker, but it's not happening right now. And again, I wouldn't mind seeing him come off the bench next week. Maybe not next week, because, you know, here's what I'll say. We play New England Revolution next week. It's on the turf. And so I want to get Messi off, and I want to get Franco Negri off because he's coming back from a hamstring injury. There's some guys that I want to not play, but I think Julian Gressel, his game style makes him less likely to have a small, you know, a soft tissue injury. So I think he should start next week. But the week after we play the New York Red Bulls, they're going to be back full force with the high press. I think that's when maybe I'd like to see him come off the bench.
Yep. Hopefully.
Okay, going into individual awards, we give out two each. We make them up, oftentimes on the spot, though not today. I'm giving out the Unorganized Boss Award.
We don't usually give out awards to Tata Martino, so I'm not going to say Tata Martino. But Unorganized Boss. Is that Sergio Busquets?
If you have an unorganized boss, he's not prepared for when things go differently. And sometimes he doesn't or she doesn't react to them as well as they should. But when that happens, they sometimes come up with solutions and they just expect for you to make it happen on the fly. And today's solution was Yannick Bright. I think he deserved an individual award. I think he deserved to be talked about because he's the reason the game changed. His addition to that midfield was the tactical adjustment. And I know we just talked about this, but it was what opened up the game for us in the last 15 minutes and allowed us to sort of walk through the last parts of this game in a comfortable way. We saw last week he brought on Yannick Bright in like the 92nd minute and it had much the same effect. He's a game killer in terms of putting the game away, where when you have a lead, he makes it so much easier for your team to just salt it away. And I think that's a really good role for him this year. We talk about putting young players in a position to succeed. And while that's rare for a young player to be the thing that he succeeds at, that's what this player does because he has the poise and the confidence and the calmness and the sort of wisdom and good touches and smart, he gets in smart positions to make interceptions. I really like him, man. He's the key to killing games off when you have a lead late, especially in the MLS where you're playing teams that they're not just going to bombard you with great chances. They're going to have to either build really methodically or they're going to have some wild chances. And he makes those wild chances harder and he stops the methodical building.
I'll be honest, as good as the logic of that award was, it was very long-winded in terms of his explanation, so I would never have guessed it in my defense, but I completely agree with you. Yannick Bright, phenomenal. Phenomenal impact player, and I think overall, this is going to be his role for this season. This is what he's going to be doing for this entire season. And
it's a good one. It's a good role.
For his first season, for his rookie season, he's doing really, really well. He has an impact coming off the bench. He shows his ability to change the game because you could automatically see the impact that he had once he came on. And that's a big, big compliment to him. For a player who's just now getting into his professional career, absolutely phenomenal. I really like him as a player. We've talked a lot about him during the preseason, throughout when we were waiting on him to be signed. I think he's going to be a big, big player for us this season. And today he got, 20 minutes, maybe 16 minutes. Next game, I think he's going to get a little bit more time as the season progresses, maybe 20, 25 minutes towards the end. And he's really going to make that difference of trying to calm everyone around him and make sure that we become stable when we're under pressure.
Yeah, he could have come on in the 58th minute and it would have been better, not worse. I'm a big fan of his. I don't know how much longer Robbie Robinson's going to be on this team, whether it's 2 days or whether it's the rest of the season, but I think it won't be that long before Yannick Bright passes him as the sort of most impactful super draft pick in Inter Miami history, because he looks like the real deal in terms of having a nice long MLS career. Okay, what's your first award?
All right, so my first award is the Internet Explorer Award. Oh God.
Is this Leo Afonso?
No.
Does it have to do with being around in the internet age and not being too old?
No, this is about being a slow starter, taking your own time. You know the Internet Explorer meme, which basically reports news from 50 years ago because they've just received it. So if you're using an Internet Explorer browser, you're always late to the party. Okay. I'm going to give this award to Sergio Busquets because it took him way too long to show up this season, but he's finally arrived and he's arrived with a goal. And I think today was one of his, I won't say the best performances in terms of what we saw from him on the pitch, but I think one of his most promising and stable and good performance that he'd put in a long time. And I'm finally glad to say that I don't have to give Sergio Busquets another Heron That Flew North award. And I finally get to give him an award that's positive, because I thought he had a really, really good game in terms of his impact and his role on this team.
Well said. We've been really critical on, you know, about Sergio Busquets on this show, and you, I think, a little bit more than even me. But he has rounded into form. And the reason we're so critical is because our expectations are so high. We could have nitpicked Franco Negri's game tonight or David Ruiz's game tonight, and it would have been much worse than Sergio Busquets. But our expectation for Busquets is that high. So every small turnover, every bad positioning, everything is sort of, we hyperanalyze it because we expect him to be nearly perfect. And he's been really good lately, and he was nearly perfect in this game. Yeah, good award, dude. The Internet Explorer, I was thinking a young person, not an old person, so I had that completely wrong. But yeah, dude, good award. He was really good. He gets the goal. It's his first friend in Miami. He was impactful in terms of breaking through the press. He was really helpful in the last 20 minutes once Yannick Bright came on, in terms of getting the ball out of our own third. He had some nice passes to Messi in this game. He's clicking into form, and I think it's been building to this. He's been better, more careful with the ball in the midfield of late, and so he's kind of gotten rid of that out of his game that we were bemoaning over the first, over the preseason, over the first month of the regular season. And he's been in a good spot lately, and I think this was the best performance yet.
Also his first goal, so yeah, good for him.
Okay, there's a lot of people I want to give an award to, but I'm going to give the Brave Face Award.
Someone who had a nightmare but put on a brave face.
This is the brave face for the baby face.
Toto Aviles.
It's going to Toto Aviles. He had that moment in the first half, and I wrote down the time. It was the 18th minute where Hani Mukhtar gets a ball over the top and Nico Freire plays it horribly. He gets beat for pace. I don't think he even realized Hani Mukhtar was there until he turned around and saw Mukhtar 4 yards behind him.
I think he misjudged the flight of that ball.
That as well, but I don't think he wasn't even sprinting full on until he saw Hani Mukhtar. And by that point, it was too late. Mukhtar doesn't go for goal. He kind of passes off to Surge. Toto Aviles gets in the way, deflects it a little bit. Surge still gets a shot towards goal, but not with any power. And Toto Aviles knocks it away again. That was sort of a game-saving or a goal-saving moment. But I'm giving him the brave face because of what I talked about earlier. He's going to get better at breaking out of the press by being forced to do it. When you're a 19-year-old and you're a center back, this is what you have to go through. It's the growing pains, and you need to face it with a brave face. He deserved an award for that moment and for being really good in this game defensively. I thought he was really good. But the brave face goes to him for being willing to play out of the back and forcing yourself to do it so you get more comfortable at it. I thought it was a great game from him, honestly.
Yeah, that one shot of him defending on the goal line and then clearing it out again, that's going to be on his highlight reels for this season. Absolutely brilliant. He saw that Nico Freire was in trouble. He didn't panic and move towards Hani Mukhtar because he saw that Nico Freire was trying to recover. He could have easily tried to leave Sam Surridge behind him and move towards Hani Mukhtar to put him off. But he stuck with Sam Surridge, took the gamble. And I think Hani Mukhtar made a bit of an error in passing that ball to Surridge because Toto Aviles had him.
The thing. Hani Mukhtar knows if he shoots that ball, Drake Callender is going to save it. And he doesn't want to be the one that gets an embarrassing save from Drake Callender. He wants that to be on Surridge's highlight reel. But
regardless, like, Aviles didn't know that Hani Mukhtar is going to pass it off to Sam Surridge. Great positioning, great recovery run, and put his body on the line to try and save that goal. Absolutely phenomenal. But just overall as well, he struggles when the back line struggles, but overall his defensive work is getting better. I think he's obviously one of our starting center backs, and I see so much potential in him. And it's games like these where you're like, Avilés is a great, great player. So I completely agree with you. He had a really, really good game, and I think he was one of the best defenders in this particular game for us.
Yeah, I thought he was one of the best players overall. Not at Messi's level, but maybe not at Busquets' level, but anyone else I would put his game up against. Okay, what is your second and final award of the show? And make it a good one, because there's lots of players to talk about.
This one's called Building a Dam Award, and I'd like you to guess who it's for.
Building a dam. Much harder than giving one. I'm giving it to Chelo Wigan.
You got it. Nice. He was an absolute monster in terms of his work rate there. Beavers are some of the hardest working animals, so, and they spend a lot of their time building a dam. And I think this game, more so than his technical ability, more so than his footballing skills, it was about his hard work and his determination to try and stick with Schaffelberg and make sure he doesn't get out and, you know, has an impact and makes a goal for his team. So Wigand, although was not as effective in the offense, his defense was absolutely fantastic. His positioning was great. We've already spoken about him, but I still wanted to give him an award because that was a tough game for him. I think after the 60th minute, he was absolutely shattered. He was heaving a bit, and you could see he was struggling just to try and keep pace, but he continued on and got beat a couple of times, but still found his way back and tried to stop Schaffelberg from being effective in any way. So for me, that was, we circled that lineup. And I said that Chelo Wigan's going to be important, and he was.
Yeah, I agree. He had a really good game defensively. He worked really hard, and he had a big assignment. I mean, Schaffelberg was going into their game, into the game, Schaffelberg was their big weapon. I think Hani Mukhtar sort of took that role over in this game, but Schaffelberg was the guy you pinpoint before the game started. We talked about him, and Chelo shut him down, dude. He isn't as explosive as Schaffelberg, but he didn't let that stop him. He didn't have to stay back. He still got forward some and was a part of the offense at least. So I thought a really good game from Chelo. He played really well, and I was really impressed. This was his best game, I think, since, you know, one of those first two games.
And I didn't think he had too many turnovers either. I think he had a couple that were obvious, but other than that, I think he played really well. So, well, hopefully he's back in form.
Yeah, no turnovers in bad spots, right? You can have a turnover if you're in the final third because, you know, you're trying to make a play happen, but it's correct when you're on your own half that it's a problem. Four good awards. Man of the match for Lionel Messi, the heron that flew north to Julian Gressel, the unorganized boss to Yannick Bright, the internet explorer to Sergio Busquets, the brave face to Toto Avilés, and building a dam award to Chelo Wigan. Feels like there's still some players that we should talk about. Let's start with Leo Afonso. I thought people overrated his first appearance. I thought that it was a game where everyone looked awful and he looked competent. But ever since then, he's just gotten better and better. He is like a real player. He works really hard. He runs all over. He's not always as structured and as organized as maybe you'd want from a player in attack. But just by the way we play, it's not always a bad thing. He's a little bit of chaos, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, he's everywhere in that front line. At one point, he's playing striker. At another point, he's on the left side. Another point, he's on the right side. I had an award for him. I had the Carpe Diem award for him, which was, you know, he's seizing his opportunity, man. He's really working hard and making sure he's making some sort of an impact, even if it's off the bench or when he's in play. With Gomez out, not sure how long Robert Taylor is going to be out for. I think he's going to get more opportunities and a lot more chances. And yeah, I see your point about Messi was not happy when Leo Afonso didn't do the run. But that's the learning curve, right? These are the things that he's going to learn about when playing with Messi, when playing with Busquets and Suarez in that front line, because he tried to get free in that position without realizing that by making that inward run, he could potentially give Messi a lot of space to either pass the ball off to him or shoot. So I think he's going to get a lot better. He has so much to offer. And yeah, a lot of positive from what I see from him.
Yeah, you know, he's a little bit of chaos, but he's not on the same page with his teammates all the time. And I think that shows. And Messi wants you to make those runs all the time because he has the ability to make those passes. And so, Afonso will learn that and he'll get better. But this is a guy playing his, I think, fifth game as a professional soccer player. I really like what I've seen so far. Yeah, fifth game. Other players that need or deserve to be talked about. Franco Negri, I thought was very solid after those first 5 minutes. He didn't have any great standout plays that were worth mentioning, but I think a solid game, didn't turn the ball over, didn't have any open spaces down that left side, but I think that was probably more of a factor of how Nashville was playing and how they had that wing back on that side that was staying back most of the game. He did what he had to do, and I thought he was solid, especially after those first 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think one thing that I noticed after the first 5 minutes was when he was on the ball, he was actually one of the outlets that was being used to get out from the back, because he would dink the ball over to Diego Gomez, and he did that a couple of times. When Diego Gomez went off injured, that's when the issues began. But for me, I think he had a really good, stable game, and he could have crumbled under the pressure, because conceding an own goal in the first 4 minutes is not fun by any means. And he could have crumbled under that pressure, and he had a lot to deal with, especially now that he's come back from injury. Playing a high intensity game is difficult, but he handled it well, got back into, composure. And then I think he did well from there.
Franco Negri is one of the few players on this team that's actually in his prime age. It feels like everyone is in their 30s or in their teens. 22 or younger, or 33 and older. Franco Negri is one of the only players that's sort of in that 25, 26, 27, 28 range. Him and Robert Taylor, it feels like, are the only players there. Maybe Nico Freire as well. I'm not exactly sure how old he is. But that's what you get when you grow up as a professional soccer player. You don't let a mistake ruin your day. You don't let a mistake ruin your confidence. That's the type of thing where half our roster, because they're 18, 19, 20, 21, would let that affect them for the next half of the game. And he didn't, because he's a professional and he knows how to put it behind him. That's just an amazing player to have on your bench. I know he's going to start until Jordi Alba comes back. But like, thinking about Nashville's depth today, Franco Negri would be like the fourth best player on their team that started for them today. And he is like, I mean, he's filling off the bench for us. And that's amazing. He's amazing in that role.
Completely agree.
There's one other player I want to talk about, but before we do, anything about David Ruiz, because it felt like this was one of his least impactful games, at least in this recent run.
Yeah, I contemplated giving him the Heron That Flew North award as well. I don't think he was as impactful as he should have been. I don't know. It was a bit of a weird one, because he was absent from most of the midfield play. And I'm not sure whether that was by design, because he was focused more on the positioning aspect and trying to be the defensive destroyer, because he was definitely not the outlet that we were playing through. So he didn't have much of an impact offensively. Defensively, maybe a little bit. But yeah, I agree. I thought he was, much like Gresso, I thought he was having a disappearing act and moments during the game. And I was really impressed by Sergio Busquets that he continued to have the level of performance that he did despite not having midfield partners who were doing too well in this game. So, yeah, I wasn't too impressed by him, but I'm not too worried about him as much as I am about Gresso, because I think that's more of a design in terms of Ruiz's role on this team than anything else.
How do you like this award name from Kareem? The Heron in Hibernation.
That's actually not bad.
It's not bad. Yeah. I don't know if birds hibernate, but It's a good one. The last player I want to talk about is Diego Gomez, because we talked about his injury, but he was having another great game. He had two or three turnovers in the opponent's final third that led to opportunities. I mean, we're going to miss him. He's an incredible player, dude. I think he is the single best box-to-box midfielder in the league. You mentioned this earlier, but when you get Diego Gomez and Redondo and Sergio Busquets in the midfield together, that is the best midfield in the MLS, bar none. And it's a shame that we have only gotten it two or three games, and it's a shame that we might not get it a ton, at least for the foreseeable future.
And listen, we might not see much of Diego Gomez after the summer, so we should probably cherish him while we can.
The silver lining is this injury probably makes it less likely he moves over the summer, because if he does miss 2 months and he misses up until the transfer window in the summer for Europe, teams are going to want to see him come back in shape and be healthy. And so I think this actually makes it more likely that he's around, assuming he doesn't have a really, you know, an Achilles tear or something really bad. So I guess that is the silver lining.
Yeah,
but we'll see. He's so good. He's so good. He turns the ball over. Putting him in the front line creates those. I mean, it's genius, because now you get those same turnovers, not quite as many, but those same turnovers, but you're getting them even higher up the pitch.
In the final third.
Dude, it's like a cheat code. They chose right.
I do prefer him in the midfield, but I get your point. I think he does everything, man. It's such a weird sort of a player that brings in so much to this team.
It's an awesome sort of a player.
Defensively, offensively, and I don't know whether this is just a purple patch, but I don't think so. I think this is the player that we're getting. He's developing into this really good box-to-box, you know, a king of all trades, essentially. And he's doing it really well. And he's linking up so well with Messi. He's linking up so well with Suarez. I think he's building himself into this team, and he doesn't look out of place by any means. So I'm just hoping he comes back soon.
Anyone else you want to talk about? I want to spend a minute sort of giving our initial thoughts on this game next weekend against the New England Revolution. But any other player before we put this game in our rearview mirror that you felt was worthy of mention?
I think the only players that we haven't spoken about are Drake Callender and Nico Freire. Callender, another solid game. He had some really, really important saves. So good to see him back making world-class saves.
Should have had a clean sheet, honestly.
Yeah, but it's just sad that he didn't. And then technically we scored all four goals. So maybe add that to a point tally.
Maybe that's good for Negri, just seeing the ball in the back of the net. That's all you got to do.
Next game in the other side.
I didn't think Freire had a great game, honestly. Yeah. I know he was good on the ball, but I think defensively he was individually a little suspect. That play where Aviles sort of saved him because Hani Mukhtar got past him, that kind of sticks in my head as his main, like the main play from this game that sticks in my head. So I don't know.
What I will say about Nico Freire and what I saw from this game, as I mentioned, I think he did a few line-breaking passes that were really important for us to get out from the back. And I'm hoping that's something that he's working on in the training pitch and something that he builds on, because if he adds that element to his game, he's going to be so important in trying to break that press and trying to be that mover from the first phase into the next. So we'll see. We'll see how that turns out. But I agree with you. He wasn't great in terms of his defensive reliability. He had a few errors here and there. But overall, as a unit, we worked well defensively. So no harm, no foul.
Okay, next week we played the New England Revolution at Gillette Stadium. They have a turf field. It's the NFL stadium for the New England Patriots. I think it would be a mistake not to start Suarez. I think it would be a mistake not to start Sergio Busquets. And I think it would be a mistake to start Lionel Messi. The reason the turf causes so many hamstring and knee injuries is when players explode, when they put a ton of sudden pressure through their hamstrings on an explosive run, because the turf is different than grass, you get better grip and you make that explosive run even more impactful on the hamstrings, which causes either hamstring injuries or a tear in the ACL, LCL. I think that's where Franco Negri tore his ACL last year. That is not the type of game that Luis Suarez has. He is not an explosive runner. And Sergio Busquets doesn't have muscles, so I'm not worried about him tearing anything.
Suarez doesn't have an ACL or an MCL or knees, according to Taylor Twellman.
Yeah. Lionel Messi does, though. He does make those sudden bursts. He does make those sudden runs. So I don't need to see Lionel Messi next week. I think we can win without him. This is the worst team in the league, at least in the Eastern Conference. Julian Gressel also doesn't make those sudden bursting runs. And then anyone coming back from a hamstring injury, like Robert Taylor, like Leo Campana, I don't really want to see them risk it when they're coming back from a hamstring injury. Sergei Kristoff as well. So I think we might see Noah Allen, but again, I don't want to see Lionel Messi, or maybe not for more than 10, 15 minutes, but Busquets and Suarez, I think, should be fine. I guess Suarez didn't play on turf last year in Brazil, but I don't know. I think he'll be okay. Or he won't. I don't know. We'll find out. They are the worst team in the East, though, so it should be a way for us to get three games in a row and 9 points. Must win next week, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think every game from now on is a must win. Get as many points on the board as we can before some of our players leave for international duty. But yeah, we're building on some momentum. Hopefully we can keep it up.
Well, it felt like after the Monterrey game, there was going to be a run of not so big games. But suddenly there is emerging a big game, not next weekend, but the following weekend. We play the New York Red Bulls. It's a revenge game from us, but all of a sudden the Red Bulls are one of the best teams in the league. So that's turning out to be a relatively big game. Should be fun when we get to it, but hopefully there's no more injuries. I'm not even going to talk about injuries anymore. Anything else you want to mention before we log off for tonight?
We're building a bit of momentum. We're winning a couple of games on the trot. Hopefully next week we can make it 3 out of 3.
All right, guys, that was our post-game show of the game last night against Nashville SC. Inter Miami wins 3-1. We'll be back on Wednesday night for our midweek episode. We'll be back Saturday in the hour before kickoff to do our pregame show live. We hope you join us. We're going to do some of the minor notes. We might be talking about Matias Rojas on Wednesday. We'll talk about the third kid. We'll talk about this kid that they signed from Argentina, from Boca Juniors, named Giovanni Farena, who is on the B team somehow. I don't know. It's weird. We'll talk about it. Until then, see you next time, Wednesday night. Have a great night.